WTF, we're doing a podcast. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Michelle. This is 50. Welcome to What the 50. Join us on our continued journey to simplify our lives.
We will seek the answers from the experts and offer tips, tools, and techniques to live your life with confidence and joy. Are we ready?
Let's go.
So here we are, Michelle.
Hi there. How are you, Nikki?
I'm good, Mish. How are you? I know you're a little hoarse.
I'm a little hoarse, but it sounds worse than how I actually feel.
Good. Good thing we have a doctor in the room.
We have a doctor in the house. A lady in red today.
Yes. So we're here with Dr. Claudine Lewis, the head cardiologist of Heart Smart Center in Montego Bay.
Welcome. Hi there, Nikki. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me.
Happy to have you.
So we've been trying to get Claudine here to talk to us a little bit about heart health for women, especially as we age a little. I say that quietly. I don't want anybody to know. Joke. Obviously, everybody knows how old we are.
We're going to start this age thing again, Nikki.
I know.
Actually, this is perfect for me because this year I turned 50. So what the 50?
Yay, welcome.
And it's like a whole bunch of things just went wrong went not so great on the eve of my 49th birthday. So a whole bunch of things went wrong last year. Just a whole bunch of different symptoms, but then it turns out it's not nothing serious, as Jamaicans would say. Jamaican patients love to ask, "Is a doc, it's serious?" So I would say nothing serious after all the checkout. Last year, toward the end of last year, just a whole bunch of things just started showing up, and I was just like, "What the 50?"
now you understand where we got
exactly.
But before we get to all the stuff about heart health, I really want to talk a little bit about Claudine. And I call her Claudine and not Dr. Lewis because that's who I know Claudine. And it's funny that you mentioned, I was telling Mish where we first met, when she was an entertainment coordinator. And honestly, her energy was very enigmatic, alluring. She had a great and wonderful energy. And obviously, she has the brains to go ahead. And of course, you can see she's a beautiful person.
I'm dying to hear about that.
Tell us about your story and about your trek from Dumfries through Mount Alvernia. And Hampton second, third
after Mobile Community College. So grew up in Dumfries in St. James, rural community. And so that was that was an interesting sort of childhood. I grew up with, I'm the youngest of seven children, and I grew up with both my parents and my two sisters were the only ones who were in the home with me as siblings as I was growing up, because the others were much older. And I'm like 6 years younger than my sister who I follow. So it was almost like as an only child. And my parents were as different as they could come, in the sense that, my father was a dreamer and believed that we could do anything with nothing. And my mother was very practical. So you can imagine the kinds of stories that fall between those two extremes. And one of them is even their approach to me going to medical school. My mother was more practical and thought that, I should pursue more of the clerical subjects so I could become a secretary, because it wouldn't require all these years of training and money. And my father was just like, if his doctor she want to turn, his doctor she going to turn. And so, he couldn't afford it. He had a little snack shop in the community of Dumfries. But he thought that he was the richest man on earth. Like, that's how he lived.
And I love that.
He's one of those people who, people ask me, where do you get this thirst and desire for, you know, like food and travel and all of that. And it's from my father. He had a little camera that he used to take pictures with. He bought me my first bottle of wine when I was 16. And, you know, so things like that. He never really limited himself. And I kind of took that approach as well. Yeah.
Love that. I love that. That's a great lesson in parenting for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Because and so, of course, when you to be exposed to that with from your dad, that I'm sure would have brought you that desire to travel and to see the rest of the world, right?
For sure. Between that and just a natural curiosity about life, right. I'm just one of those people who always wants to know more, and I always want the backstory and the why and the how. You know, which also led me to my particular specialty in medicine. Nikki's married to an internal medicine doctor. And so, you know, we're like the house MDs, you know, we're the Sherlock Holmes. We like to put clues together. So we naturally have a curious mind, I would say, people who are drawn to this field. It's, you know, the same thing applies outside of career and work. I'm just curious about the world. You know, I want to know everything about everywhere and everyone. And nothing is mundane or boring to me.
That's exciting.
Yes, and 54 countries.
I tell you,
Amisha, I don't know if you follow Claudine on Instagram, but every time she's on one of these fabulous trips, I'm texting her, Claudine, I want to go. I want to go. Tell me about it.
Maybe we should arrange that.
Oh, my.
Maybe we should arrange that for your 50th, Claudine.
She has the best.
We should. We should. But Nikki also has a lot of very interesting trips, you know. Different. I mostly travel solo of late. I used to travel with a very good friend from med school. We live in different countries, so it, you know, become a little bit difficult to coordinate. And because I love travel so much, and because, you know, your friends don't necessarily have the time on hand or so, because of late, I have set up my work life in such a way that I actually travel and work. So people may wonder, how are you a cardiologist or a doctor and be able to work remotely? But part of my job involves a lot of what we call diagnostics. So reporting on ECGs, heart electrocardiograms, heart ultrasounds, 24-hour heart monitors. So all the tests that are done in-house by my team, we have the setup that I can read them remotely. So I actually, you know, do my schedule so that even before COVID, I had Tuesdays to Thursdays in office and Mondays and Fridays as work from home days or remote work days. So if I wanted, for example, to run to Miami or to New York for a long weekend, I would be able to do that and work from there. So that's something that I started in 2017. Once I went full time into my practice, because when I was working in the hospital, it was something that was a challenge for me. The lack of autonomy was one, and two, just that rigid structure of 2-week vacation, 3-week vacation. I found that I really needed more. And it was difficult for me to mood-wise. I felt a little bit underfulfilled, even though I was enjoying what I was doing for work. And it wasn't until I was actually able to do it that I realized how much I needed it and how much it was valuable to me.
And wow. That's what you talk about, designing your life, people. Right.
Absolutely.
I love that, Claudine. I really do love that. And everyone, we all have choices, and we make those choices and how we want to live our life.
Excellent. So tell us some of the places that you've actually traveled to, and also tell us what it is like to travel solo.
So far... So my first trip outside of the U.S., outside of Jamaica, was to New York. And I was 23 or something like that. I was older. I wasn't one of those Because I mean, I didn't grow up in a household that had that kind of revenue. So I didn't grow up going, away for the summer and all of that. So it was when I was in medical school, my friend who I was traveling with up until recently, she was just like, "You need to get your visa and let's go to New York." So that was my first trip, going to New York. And then once I finished medical school, and this was before, Instagram and Facebook, any social media. Four of us, my friend from med school, two of my friends from high school, we all went to Europe for a month. It
Wow.
was like a modified backpack trip. So we didn't actually backpack it, but we had like, well, three of us complied with that, and the other one. So we had a little carry-on and then a backpack.
Okay.
But one friend, she traveled with a big old grip. And that was, and I say a big old grip because it became an issue when, because we were taking the train around, and you know how it is to take the train. And some of the trains are not Eurostar where you have your reserved seating. And so that was kind of, that became a little bit interesting, She wasn't with us for the entire, month. She was with us for 2 weeks, but with her big grip, because she just could not see herself, packing light. So we had the whole thing planned out in terms of, all the various. So one of the things my friends know about me, I'm a little bit OCD. I make spreadsheets for almost everything. Back then, I wasn't making spreadsheets, but I would have, a schedule of what we're going to do, and I would research the heck out of everything. Now I'm less OCD about travel. I will look into where I might want to eat because that's still important to me. And if there's a restaurant that I might really like that might, have a long wait list, I might try to book that ahead. But now I'm mostly doing what we call unspontaneous spontaneity, put it that way. So I don't plan, but I have an idea of what I want to do.
Okay. It's
So I'm not
more
going,
relaxed now.
yeah, so more relaxed, yeah. And and I don't plan everything so exactly, but second trip was that big trip, and we went to England, to London, and then we went over to Italy. We started in the south of Italy, in Napoli, went to Capri, Anna Capri, Rome, Florence, Venice. Then we took the overnight train from Venice to, we went to Milan as well. We took the overnight train from Milan to Amsterdam, spent a couple of days in Amsterdam, and then to Paris, and then back to London. So that was really, really nice. And it was, now when I think about it, it just seems kind of way ahead of our time, in terms of poor little girls from Jamaica packing up themselves, but them going to Europe for a month, with our little lonely planet on our map and
The
everything.
lonely, I
Those days,
remember this.
those days, you didn't have smartphone with
No
Google Maps
GPS,
and
nothing
all of
like
those
that.
things. Yeah, so I remember having this little compass on my, it was like a compass that I could put fit, pin onto my clothing. I used to call it, I don't know if you remember this, what was it? Ponciculity? You remember it was a cartoon, or I'll tell you what it was. So it was a cartoon series, and one of the characters was walking around with a compass that she called her. She couldn't pronounce it, so she called it her ponciculity, which was really her way of finding her way home. So that was my ponciculity that I'd walk around with, which
So
would
you
help
really
us
had a
to,
compass?
yes. So that, I would kind of know when we're heading in the wrong direction, and so on. So,
Oh my
I
gosh,
was
it's like
pretty good at map
orienteering.
reading.
Oh, I am the worst map reader and the
Having
worst with north, south, east, and west. Oh my gosh. So
a compass helps though. But I found that I would always start off walking the wrong direction. Like wherever you think north would be is the opposite direction. That's what I have found. Yeah, so Europe, and then since then I've visited every continent except for Antarctica. So I've been to Australia, I've been to Africa, I've been to Morocco in Africa, as well as South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Angola, Zimbabwe. and Europe. I've been to a couple places there. South America, I've been to Brazil, and I've also been to Central America as well, Costa Rica, Mexico, Panama.
And Asia, you've
Wow.
gone to a lot of places in
Yes.
Asia.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Asia, yeah.
Hello.
So I've been to Turkey, and also not Asia, but it was our transit point to Asia. So I've been to Turkey, and then we went over to Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. So that was really, really good. And Japan, South Korea. And Japan is actually one of my all-time favorites. I really, really love Japan.
And we won't talk to Claudine about her slipper collection from the hotels. Not
Mickey.
a
Yeah, so
collection.
it's one of the things that I admit to. I like to collect hotel slippers, and I
Yeah,
have
me
quite a few
too.
of them.
So
That sounds exciting though. But I have never traveled solo, and I've never even thought of traveling solo. Have you, Nikki? I don't think I could hold.
No, I ha not on a big trip like I've traveled to a destination.
Oh yeah, yes. I mean, like on a trip.
Right, but
On a
even
trip
now
on board.
this is the I'm going to the UK for a work trip with people that I never knew. I'm going to meet them in a couple of weeks, and somebody said to me, "You're going by yourself?" I said, "Yes, go and put on my big girl panty and go."
I have done that. I have done that. I've gone to conferences overseas, but in terms of a vacation, planning the restaurants and
Going
excursions
by
and so on,
yourself.
I've never done that. I've never even thought of doing it. I
Me
mean, I think
neither.
that's very brave in my mind.
I think
But
it's liberating, truthfully. Like if you can do that.
it's a personal choice, right, Claudine? But I mean, I'm sure it's exciting for you.
It's exciting, and admittedly, it's also, especially of late since COVID, it has been a little bit anxiety inducing, to be honest.
Really?
When I was going to Southern Africa, to Namibia and so on, I was a little bit more anxious than usual. Like I felt as I was going through Qatar, and there was some issue with visa. I couldn't leave the airport. They weren't processing any visitor's visa. And I don't know, if you guys travel on a Jamaican passport, but traveling on a Jamaican passport can be quite challenging when it comes to
Yes.
visa.
Yes.
And so, it's one of those things that you kind of have to be really prepared for, just to make sure you don't run into any border issues. And so, that trip, I wanted to go to Oman. One of my friends from high school lives there, and it's, a 1 hour flight from Qatar. And so that's kind of how I look at the map and go, oh, what's near to this? What's near to that? I can go here or there. And it turns out that I booked the flight, assuming that it would have been just easy for me to get a visa to go, because they had that you could just process a visa online. But once I started the process with a Jamaican passport, I actually needed to be sponsored by a hotel to get the visa. It wasn't just a simple process of, so it was either, someone who lives there would sponsor me, or a hotel or a travel company. And so I reached out to a couple of hotels, who said, we don't do that. Then we got one who did it. And then, just once they started to go through the whole process with me, I just abandoned the idea and forgot about it. So some of those things can make it a little bit challenging. But, traveling solo, I would definitely prefer to travel with company.
Right.
But I actually do enjoy traveling solo. Not because I want to, but because that's just kind of how things are, in the sense that I don't have a partner and my friends are not always available to travel. And because I love it so much, rather than just saying I wish I could go, I just go.
Just go.
Yes, and one of the things that helps is that I've actually engaged a travel company, and they have been awesome in planning my trips for me, especially when it comes to places that are very unfamiliar as it relates to the language and culture. So you know, going to somewhere like Europe, I would probably not ask for their help, maybe just for hotels or to help me with booking restaurants and so on. But to travel to somewhere like Asia or Africa where, you know, the language is so different, I don't have any understanding of anything. I've actually used a travel company, and the way they work is that they just take care of everything from the moment you land until you depart. So, you know, you have what they call a meet and greet at the airport. So when I went to South Africa the other day, every airport there was a greeter who met me, whisked me through, and then handed me over to the ground people. And you know, so there was always this point of contact. And so in terms of personal safety and so on, you know, I never felt unsafe. And so I think those are some of the things that would make us feel uncomfortable about traveling alone. And also just, you know, wanting somebody to share the experience with, you know, talking about where you are, or, you know, some of the things you encounter, people you encounter, you know, just having that engagement. Staying connected on social media in some way helps. Even though these days I don't do that as much, I tend to post after I come back or so, or maybe I may post a little story or something. But that kind of makes you feel not so alone. You know, just sometimes sharing that. And usually also for safety, I send my itinerary to my family and my friends. You know, my manager at work has my itinerary. I check in every day, you know, so that they know that I'm okay. So those are things that kind of help with making it not so seem so daunting. And usually this last trip, I was very anxious before I went, but once I got there, I was okay. You know, and so usually once I get there, and people are, you know, I think in general, lots of, you know, some bad things happen, but I think in general, people are just good natured. And so for most of my trips, I've actually encountered really, really kind people everywhere. And so it makes, and I find traveling solo, you tend to connect more with people because you're not then engaged with whomever you're traveled with, and you're more open to these external connections. So yeah.
Wow. So where has
Well,
been your, or maybe if you can choose, where has been your favorite place to visit?
that is very difficult. I could say top 10 would include, I love South Africa. I love Cape Town. I loved Japan a lot. I also love Cambodia. And so each place is so different. I loved Bhutan, but for a whole different reason. India, I really loved. Not because of India per se, but that trip was planned. It was one of these insider journeys, that is a group trip planned by the company that I travel with sometimes. And that was the first group trip I was going on with strangers. So, you know, going from traveling alone to traveling on a group trip. And I must say, the way they did it was amazing. So even though you were on this group trip, there was a lot of flexibility. We were on a bus for most of the time as a group, but there was always behind that main bus, four or five small SUVs that, in case you get tired or you want to do something else, you could opt out of the group activity and go and do something on your own with a driver. And it was also a trip that was co-hosted by Architectural Digest, so they had, you know, an editor from Architectural Digest, along with a local guide, was giving us, you know, the full rundown of the architecture in Delhi and Jaipur, and some of the homes that were featured in Architectural Digest, India, the owners hosted us. So it wasn't just doing tourist activities. So, you know, we're going to somebody's house for lunch or for cocktails in the evening or something like that. And that made it all the more special. So, that would say what was one of my
That
most
was
favorite
memorable.
trips for those reasons.
Remember
Very
that
memorable.
trip. I
Yeah.
remember. I was like, Claudine, this looks so beautiful. Yeah, it was from
Yeah.
your stories and your Instagram. It was
Yeah.
amazing for sure. Yeah.
So we have spoken about traveling the world, pretty much traveling the world. But as a cardiologist, though, and we're doing relationships for our series, maybe we could talk a little bit about affairs of the heart. I have a question, which I think, I mean, Nikki's probably going to laugh at this, but I've read many times, and I've people will say, you know, a broken heart. What really is a broken heart? What is there really such a thing called broken heart syndrome?
Actually, yes, it is true, but not in the way that we think of it. You know, we think of broken heart syndrome from, you know, a failed relationship, a relationship that doesn't work out, unrequited love, that kind of thing. But there is a cardiac condition, a heart condition called broken heart syndrome. And in medical terms, it's actually called Takotsubo syndrome, which is named after a type of teapot, the shape of it. That's basically the shape that the heart assumes when it is broken like that. And I've actually seen only one patient with it in my entire time. And this is when I was in my training in Toronto. And it was very, very odd. This lady ran up a flight of stairs, and I think she had had something emotional happen before that. You know, I think she had a death in her family. She was a little bit older, in her 70s. But she ran up a flight of stairs, and at the top of the stairs, felt like she was going to collapse, and had some shortness of breath and so on. And when she came in, it looked like she was having a heart attack, but the other things that we look for in a heart attack were not there. And I remember reading about Takotsubo's or broken heart syndrome and going, I wonder if this could be it. And it turns out that's what it was, once, you know, when we ran all the tests. But it's more of a physical thing than it is emotional. Okay. But there have been some reports of women, mainly actually, it's something that seems to be more, women seem to be more prone to it than men, this Takotsubo syndrome. And yeah, so it's not so much about emotional stress or, right, you know, that sadness or loneliness when a relationship fails or ends or you're going through relationship trouble. What I see mostly when women in particular are going through emotional stress and relationship stress, there's a lot of complaints about palpitations. So heart racing, fluttering, that unsettled feeling in the chest tightness. Nice. So those are some of the things that the women tend to come about. Some of the times, you know, they've gone to their family doctors, not getting any answers. And so they end up coming to me. And my approach usually is to, as we say, make sure nothing structural is wrong, meaning, you know, the heart is not enlarged or weak. Just make sure there's nothing physical, and then we address the emotional. You know, we talk about it during the gathering of the information, but because I don't want to label anyone as being, you know, a hypochondriac or, you know, having anxiety or whatever, I usually take the approach of, let's just make sure everything physical is okay. And right, then we look at the other stuff.
Okay.
So in our 50s now, Claudine, mm-hmm, what should we be checking on for our hearts? And as you say, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I hate a doctor.
I love every time. So
married to one, right? We actually do recommend that you start screening at age 20.
20?
And this is for everyone. Yes.
Well, we're gone so way past that now.
Mm-hmm. So you do your first screening at 20. If you have no family history of any heart disease, you start at 20 with having your blood pressure done, blood sugar, cholesterol profile. So those would be the main, what we call modifiable risk factors. So things, once we find out about them, we can modify them and reduce your risk of developing a heart condition.
We should be sending our children then to a primary care physician or a cardiologist to have these checks done.
At age 20, yes. We don't call them children anymore.
Oh, well, our children.
Parents.
This is for both male and female.
for both male and female. And okay. So if those checks are normal, then we recommend that you do that every 5 years.
Okay.
And, you know, you continue. If they're abnormal, then you would follow the advice of your doctor, because they would then, you know, assess your risk and determine what course of follow-up is needed, if you need a more intense follow-up or so. So that would be it. So it's actually, you know, you don't start at age 50, you start much earlier, which is a little bit different from like screening for colon cancer. Most times it's at 50, 40 for breast, prostate, and so on. But for the heart, we actually do recommend that you start, you know, in your 20s.
Wow.
We didn't know that, did we, Nikki?
No. So we have to all make appointments to get our, yes.
We have appointments to make.
Yes, we always have appointments to make. So what
are you making them? Are you making them or avoiding them?
We will make them.
Yes, all Michelle right. will Happy force to me to that. Make them. When you open your Kingston office, can I say that?
And put it off. Let's see. Let's see if that will come.
Okay. So your office is currently in Montego Bay?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So I've seen that you've been doing some big event for Heart Month. Could you tell us a little bit about that? What is all of your excitement about?
Right. So Heart Month is celebrated February each year. And during Heart Month, there is one day that is dedicated to women, and that's Wear Red Day. And it's the first Friday of February each year. Okay. And so, you know, in the past, we've done little things to observe it and, you know, kind of raise awareness, social media posts. We may also invite women to come to the office and have, you know, what we call a healthy heart screen done and so on. But this year, we wanted to go bigger, you know, and make more noise. And so we had two activities in the one day. And initially, when I was thinking about it, I was just like, am I biting off more than I can chew? Should I just do one event? And then, you know, maybe the next year we do the other one. And then we're just like, you know what, let's just go. So in the day, we had a healthy heart screening fair. And in the evening, we had our Wear Red cocktail event. And part of what we did, so Wear Red Day is really about raising awareness about heart disease in women. Because the research has shown that women may not have the very classic or typical symptoms of some types of heart disease that men may have. And so sometimes it may be overlooked either by the woman themselves or by the doctor who they go to. And so this whole campaign was started by American Heart Association to shed light on this and to encourage women to share their stories. So one of the things I've done is kind of copy what they do, which is to have what we call ambassadors. So I call them Red Dress Ambassadors. So these are actually four women who I've been treating and who have been comfortable with sharing their heart health stories from the moment they got diagnosed, what symptoms they were experiencing. And it has actually been one of the most successful parts of our campaign, in that part of the reason for doing it is to make it more relatable, you know, so that people can, and I chose women from different demographics. So older, younger, you know, different social demographic, et cetera. And so one of the ladies, she had a heart attack at age 34.
Wow.
You know, which you would think doesn't happen. It's unusual, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. And we had one lady who had rheumatic fever that damaged her heart. And it's, you know, in our third world setting, rheumatic fever is still very common. And rheumatic fever is one of those things where, you know, you just get a strep throat, just a regular sore throat with streptococcal bacteria. And it may sometimes leave your heart damaged. Wow. And leave what we call rheumatic heart disease. So some people during the time of that rheumatic fever may feel unwell, but some people just feel like they have the flu, it goes away, and it leaves them with some damage, and they find out later on in their 30s and 40s. So this is what happened to this particular lady, where she just started feeling tired and out of breath. And then when she went to the doctor, had an ECG done and some examination, they heard a heart murmur. And, you know, it turns out that she had heart valves that were damaged from she was young, but she was not aware of it. Wow. These days, because of, and this is one of the really good things if it's done properly, because I find that people cheat the process. And, you know, it's something that I talk about, that you're actually cheating yourself and your child. So, you know, now it's a requirement by the Ministry of Education that all children who are returning to school should have a medical before they go back to school. And there are different components of it. But what I see happens, and I mean, I've had people come and ask me, can you sign up this form for me? No, I'm not signing up that form for you. Your child needs to be examined. If I'm going to complete the form, I'm going to do the examination. That's the whole point of it, to pick up things that you may not be aware of. And the reason for saying that is for someone like this lady who only found out in her 40s that she had a leaking heart valve. If during those times that was a requirement, she probably would have found out much younger and would have been on a, you know, a course of follow-up and have been properly planned for. She ended up having emergency surgery because she collapsed because her valve was so bad. You know, her heart stopped a couple of times. They had to, you know, resuscitate her, etc. And she's on the other side to share her story. So that's part of the whole, you know, campaign that we're doing. Just encouraging women to be more in tune with our bodies and just notice any changes from our baseline. And, you know, saying, listen, I'm going to check this out. It's a little bit different from how we'd usually feel, and not feel like you're being too anxious or being, you know, pushy or so, but just really being in tune with your body and knowing when there's something that's off and just taking charge of that.
For sure.
But it's better to check and hear that everything is okay rather than not check and then it's too late. So I agree, it's really important once we know that something, because we know when something is off.
Yeah.
We know when something is off.
Yeah.
So in closing, Claudine, I'm going to ask you a little bit of a, I don't know if it's a controversial question, but a lot of people have been talking about that there's been heart attacks more prevalent in younger people now due to the vaccine. Any thoughts on that from you?
So that is not something that I have any statistics on. In terms of just anecdotally, from what I would see in my practice, I have actually seen more complications of COVID than I have seen complications related to the vaccine. I have not seen any heart attacks at all in young people. I mean, this one young lady who I've seen, this was pre-COVID with the heart attack, and she's diabetic, and it's known that diabetes is a heart disease equivalent in terms of coronary artery disease equivalent. The one person who I saw with a vaccine-related complication, she actually had what we call myocarditis, which is inflammation of the muscle of the heart and not really a heart attack. Okay. And so that is something that is recorded and noted as a complication of especially the mRNA vaccines, like the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, not so much with the So like the AstraZeneca and so on, the modified vector vaccines don't seem to cause that. Churchill doesn't seem to support that.
Yes. And with my husband, who was a COVID doctor on the wards, he will tell you for sure. No. Complications from COVID are far more common
than vaccine complications. Mm-hmm. But there's so much hysteria and so around the vaccine and misinformation, you know, that it's very easy for people to buy into those things. Yeah.
But thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us. And I'm glad that we've got you in February, Heart Month. And we love to hear your story.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And I actually enjoyed your questions. But now I'm actually going to go back to work because I've not finished working for the day. Yeah.
So enjoy your next trip when you travel.
Thank you
again.
So much. You know, year is the first year that I do not have any trips planned. Usually by September of the previous year, I would have my entire next year planned out just because I have to figure out when I'm going to be out of office so I don't have patients scheduled during those times. But for this year, I actually have nothing planned. The only thing that I know I want to do, which I haven't planned anything yet, I want to go to Antarctica. And I also want to go to Wimbledon. It's the only Grand Slam that I have not.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's the only Grand Slam tournament that I have not been to as yet. So that's the only thing that I have on my agenda for July. But it's been so busy that it haven't been able to take the time and sit down and go, okay, what's my budget? What can I do? Here's where I want to go. I know I want to go to Kenya. And I want to go to West Africa. I want to go to Benin and Ghana and Nigeria and Senegal. But those are the top places I have, but I don't really have anything planned.
Well, I think you should start leading some tours, right?
That's a lot of work. Then the enjoyment is no longer there.
And a lot of responsibility, right?
Yeah, having done that with my friends when we did Europe, because I was kind of like the team leader, it's a lot of work. And, you know, people kind of look at you when things go wrong, like, see, this restaurant was bad. See, this was,
Anyhow, well, take care and thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Michelle. Lovely meeting you. Hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the 50. Please show your love and encouragement by sharing, subscribing, and leaving a review wherever you're listening.
And don't forget to like and follow us on Instagram. And please join our active Facebook group at What.the50.